The United Nations Secretary General says Israel's killing of Palestinians in Gaza hospitals is, quote, horrible. And the Yemeni army fires barrage of ballistic missiles at Israeli targets, saying that their operations will continue until regime's aggression against Gaza stops. Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to World News. And now, Israel's brutality in the besieged Gaza Strip shows no signs of abating. Regime forces have carried out a military operation now against Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. The Israeli military says it is conducting the operation in a specific area in the hospital. Al-Shifa has been one of the main targets of Israeli strikes since the regime began its deadly onslaught against Gaza some 40 days ago. The medical site had been encircled by Israeli armored vehicles for the past days, which houses over 8,500 Palestinians, including medical staff, the wounded, and displaced. On Tuesday, Israeli airstrikes pounded Al-Shifa Hospital and its intensive care unit. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza said dozens of people were killed in the attacks. Israel claims that Hamas has a command center under the hospital, an allegation that's been rejected by the resistance movement. And the situation in Deir al-Balah Hospital in central Gaza also remains life-threatening amid Israel's bombardment. Situation inside Al-Quds Hospital has also been described as dire and catastrophic by the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. Hundreds of people, including medical staff, patients, the wounded, and their families, are all currently in the process of evacuating the hospital. Israel launched its war on Gaza on October 7th, and since then, the regime's killed nearly 11,500 Palestinians, most of them women and children.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
Strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals.
Israeli genocidal war has not only claimed civilian life, but it's also had political ramifications as well. Mass protests continue damaging Israel's world standing, while politicians are also being axed over their pro-Israel views, like in the case of the former UK Home Secretary, Suella Braverman.
Yeah. The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
The United Nations Secretary General says Israel's killing of Palestinians in Gaza hospitals is, quote, horrible. Antonio Guterres has called for an immediate ceasefire in the besieged Palestinian enclave, and that, according to his chief spokesman.
The Secretary General is deeply disturbed by the horrible situation and the dramatic loss of life in several hospitals in Gaza. In the name of humanity, the Secretary General calls for an immediate ceasefire. And just to give you a bit more granular information that we've been receiving from the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs regarding Gaza, they tell us that all but one of the hospitals in Gaza City and northern Gaza are reportedly out of service as of yesterday, and that is due to lack of power, medical items, oxygen, food, and water, compounded by bombardments and fighting in the vicinities of those health centers. Al-Ali Hospital in Gaza City, which currently accommodates over 500 patients, is the sole medical facility able to receive patients amid increasing shortages and challenges. Hospitals and medical personnel are specifically protected under international humanitarian law, and all parties to the conflict must ensure their protection, and they must not be the object of combat. Any military operation around and within hospitals must take steps to spare and protect the patients, medical staff, and other civilians.
As Israel continues to bomb health facilities in Gaza, the World Health Organization has turned a spotlight on dire situation of patients and hospitals. WHO says transferring vulnerable patients from hospitals is impossible because they may very well lose their lives.
The people in the hospitals were very vulnerable, very sick. So moving them was an impossible task. And you were asking doctors and nurses to move people, knowing that that would kill them. And again, why would you need to move them? A hospital should never be under attack. A hospital is a place, a safe haven. This is agreed under international humanitarian law. Secondly, there's lack of capacity in the south. The bulk of the healthcare, especially the complex healthcare, and most of the people we are seeing who are in need of healthcare right now in Gaza are in need of very complex healthcare just to survive. The bulk of the capacity is in the north. In the south, there is only a few hospitals that can, there are far fewer hospitals in the south. There are 11 currently functioning as best they can, not at full steam, and they are completely full.
Now, Rashida Tlaib, a Palestinian-American lawmaker who has on several occasions called on the U.S. government to stop Israel's war on Gaza. Just days ago, the House of Representatives, including some of her Democratic colleagues, censured her for comments critical of Israel and in support of Palestinians.
We will not be intimidated. We will not be silenced. And we will not stop until we save lives. We will continue to demand a ceasefire, demand the immediate delivery of humanitarian aid in Gaza. How many more lives will be enough? How many more children have to be killed? How many more families traumatized and torn apart? There is nothing humanitarian about giving innocent civilians 4-hour break before they are bombed. We are calling for an end to the violence, not a break in the violence. The humanitarian pause is not enough. President Biden, humanitarian pause is not enough. President Biden, I hope you're listening. I'm consistent in telling this over and over again. You must listen to the voices of the majority of Americans who are calling for a ceasefire now. So today, again, please look to the majority of your residents, many of which supported you. They're calling you to do what's right. End the violence, support a ceasefire now.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has slammed the U.S. for accusing it of having a command center under Al-Shifa Hospital. Hamas said the White House is giving the green light to Israel by making such accusations to intensify its massacre of civilians taking refuge in hospitals and medical facilities. The resistance movement said such accusations are made with the main objective of destroying Gaza's healthcare system and displacing Palestinians. The group said U.S. is directly responsible for enabling Israel's genocide on Gaza. White House earlier said it has evidence that Hamas is using Al-Shifa Hospital to run its military operations and store weapons. A senior Hamas official dismissed similar accusations by Israel, calling them, quote, naive attempts by the regime to cover up its defeat in Gaza.
The naive images of the weapons and the computer which they gathered from the rooms of the nurses and from different locations within the hospital. This is a naive attempt to say that this was a headquarter or a center for Al-Qassam brigades. We know that they are lying. We know that they will continue to lie to justify their crimes against the medical sector and against the sick and the wounded. And we know that they will continue with these lies in order to cover up their failure.
In a press conference in Beirut, Osama Hamdan said that Hamas has a vast network of underground tunnels throughout Gaza and does not need to use hospitals as military bases. He said 25 of the 35 hospitals in Gaza are now out of commission due to Israel's bombs. Hamdan said Israel is targeting Gaza's infrastructure and hospitals with the aim of pushing the people out of the territory and bring about another Nakba, or catastrophe in Arabic. Hamdan urged UN to investigate the situation of Gaza hospitals and debunk the Israeli lies. He said Hamas is on a path to victory and that Israel's propaganda cannot save it from defeat. Military wing of Hamas has conducted a series of retaliatory attacks targeting Israeli positions and armored vehicles in Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade says it's targeted a group of Israeli forces in southern Gaza city with short-range missiles. It says it bombed a building where Israeli troops were stationed, killing a soldier. Several Israeli tanks and armored vehicles were also hit west and south of the city. A group has fired rockets at Tel Aviv, causing injuries, one critical. The city of Bat Yam, just south of Tel Aviv, and southern city of Ascalon were also targeted. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement continues targeting Israeli positions along border areas in support of Gaza. One of the latest attacks, Hezbollah fired rockets towards Israeli-occupied Kafr Shouba Hills in southern Lebanon, causing injuries among Israeli soldiers. Movement says it targeted a group of Israeli soldiers also near Al-Marj site, causing injuries there too. Meanwhile, the Israeli army says its positions in several areas were targeted by missiles from Lebanon. Israel has been continuously bombarding what it calls Hezbollah positions in southern Lebanon over the past few days. Yemen's military says it successfully fired a barrage of missiles at positions of Israeli regime in occupied Palestinian territories. Spokesman Yahya Sari said Yemeni strikes hit crucial targets in al-Rashrash area near the city of Eilat. A Yemeni official said the military will not hesitate in targeting Israeli ships in the Red Sea or any spot within reach. Sari said Yemenis will continue operations against Israel until the regime stops its savage war that's killed over 11,000 Palestinians. Earlier, leader of Ansarullah movement said the Yemen will constantly monitor movement of Israeli ships, especially in Bab al-Mandab Strait. Said Yemen's drone units will continue hitting targets inside occupied territories as well. The Pentagon has expressed grave concerns over increased attacks on U.S. military sites in West Asia amid growing anti-American sentiments. Pentagon spokeswoman said U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria have been attacked 55 times over the past month, 27 times in Iraq and 28 in Syria. She said 59 U.S. troops have been injured, and Washington blames strikes on Iran, saying the country is backing anti-U.S. operations in the region. Iran, though, has dismissed the claim, saying resistance groups act independently and don't take orders from Tehran. Anti-U.S. sentiments are running high throughout the region over Washington's support for Israeli genocide in Gaza. And people around the world continue hitting the streets to show solidarity with Palestinians and demanding an end to the bloodshed in Gaza. Pro-Palestinian protesters gathered near the British Embassy in Beirut, condemning Britain's role in the war. Also in the occupied West Bank, doctors took to the streets of Al-Khalil, denouncing indiscriminate Israeli bombing of civilians and attacks on hospitals. U.S. city of Chicago saw hundreds of Jewish peace activists converge at a major train station during rush hour. They blocked entrance to the Israeli consulate and demanded U.S. support a ceasefire. Police attacked the protesters and made a number of arrests. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید. ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می‌کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد میشید به حق تعالی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, in a couple of episodes, we made you familiar with the views of Fred Halliday, who has made researches on international relations and West Asian issues. He said in his speech in 2008 that the Islamic Revolution has been the most modern revolution of human history and a totally non-violent development. Today, you will be hearing further of his views on the Islamic Revolution and the unmatched personality of the leader of this revolution, Imam Khomeini. We hope you'll enjoy it. Fred Halliday, in one of his interviews on Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution, says the legitimacy of Iran's revolution was to create an independent Iran. This country had never been a serious colony. It had rather remained semi-colony, and during the rule of the Shah, it was under the dominance of foreigners. Imam Khomeini brought back Iran's pride. Once he said that, we will rub the nose of colony to the soil. Halliday considers the Iranian people's resistance against bullying countries and despotic rulers, and also in the eight-year war, as an example of honor which was created among the Iranian nation and other Islamic nations after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The Irish thinker continues, in the Islamic world, despite hostility with Iran and the issues which were caused by Iraq-Iran war, the clergy gave the sense of honor to people and made them believe that they can defend their culture. They like to remain Muslim and have relation with the past of Iran and the Iranian literature and myths. Towards the end of his interview, Halliday refers to Imam Khomeini's effort to coordinate between different ingredients of the Iranian identity and calls the Islamic Revolution as a symbol of this coordination. In a speech in 1998, Fred Halliday pointed to Imam Khomeini's peerless traits in ruling the hearts and attracting people and said, Ayatollah Khomeini had a magical attraction and a mystic power which drew the people. Now, 20 years after the Iranian Revolution, many Muslims in the world praise Imam Khomeini as an honest man. I remember when he was discharged from hospital at the age of 83, I asked him, "How are you?" He said, "I'm fine, and I thank people who are concerned about me." This was the first time that I was lying on a bed. I think he was the symbol of simple way of living and morals that were very pleasant for people. Irish thinker Fred Halliday, impressed by the political life of Imam Khomeini, considers Islam quiet compliant with democracy and says, you can be a Muslim and free. Let me put forward a special issue on democracy, having elections and political parties. Those who hate Muslims say that Islam cannot be democratic, and some of the Muslim rulers say that this is a Western system and we don't want it. But these don't have anything to do with Islam. In general, I didn't find a contradiction between democracy and human rights with the Islamic culture. For your information, dear listeners, it should be said that what is preached in the West as democracy is 100% opposite what is practiced. A very simple example to show this contradiction is the way the French police and government are behaving with thousands of demonstrators who have taken to the streets of Paris and other cities for hundreds of Saturdays to protest against the undemocratic and anti-democratic laws in the country. This is France, the so-called cradle of democracy. Thus, what Imam Khomeini and his successor, Ayatollah Khamenei, mean by democracy is truly the rule of people and the sample seen in the West for decades. Anyway, Halliday enumerates five factors for occurrence of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. He names them as asymmetric expansion of capitalist economy in Iran, political feebleness of Shah's regime, broad coalition of opposite forces, prominent role of Islam and Imam Khomeini's leadership, and the altering international ground. Halliday believes that before the Islamic Revolution, there were two outstanding theories in explication of occurrence of the four major revolutions in the world. According to the first theory, revolutions, in spite of all domestic issues, are the outcome of external and global conditions such as foreign attack and undermining of the ruling system is the support for revolutions. The second theory maintains that revolutions are the outcome of political, economic, and social structures of countries, and individuals play little role in them. Yet, the Irish professor stresses that the Islamic Revolution in Iran nullified these theories. The Iranian Shah, Mohammad Reza, enjoyed the highest scale of support from foreigners, especially his master and closest ally, the United States of America, till the last day of his stay in Iran. On the contrary, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, enjoyed no support from any government or global power whatsoever. However, according to most experts of Islamic studies, such as martyr Ayatollah Mutahhari, what led to the triumph of the Islamic Revolution were three factors, namely people's faith in God, unity of people, and the unmatched leadership of Imam Khomeini. The points to note in the views of Fred Halliday on the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini is that he differentiates between this revolution and the political Islam and the extremist and Salafi outlooks of the groups like Taliban and Al-Qaeda. He has found Iran is a country with a very old and deep-rooted culture and history. He maintains that Iran stands very high in the region, from the viewpoint of cultural, historical, political, scientific, and economic power. Halliday castigates those who try to compare Al-Qaeda with the Islamic Revolution and considers it very false. The Irish researcher believed that Al-Qaeda is not an offspring of Islam, nor even the past Arab world. It is rather an extremist violence. He said in a speech, "It is true that the ideology implied in the discourse of the Islamic Revolution and the stances of Imam Khomeini claim universality contrary to Al-Qaeda. The Islamic Republic never intends to invade other nations or murder foreigners. Imam Khomeini has mentioned the universal issues of the revolution to guide nations." Well, dear listeners, on that note, we have to wrap up this episode. Next time, we will continue with the view of another thinker on Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone. Let us contemplate on a gem of a saying from the leader of the pious and the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, who has talked about vicissitudes of life. Opportunity passes away like the cloud, therefore make use of good opportunities. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, arrogance towards the poor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Let me ask you this. How do we treat poor Muslims? How do we treat unwealthy or less fortunate Muslims? Do we love them? Do we care for them? Or do we despise and hate and avoid them? Are we humble in front of them? Or do we display arrogance in front of them? These questions are very critical for us to be able to check if we are still on the path of Islam or not. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, he said, "Keep on having love for poor Muslims. Anyone who despises them and shows arrogance to them, he has slipped away from Allah's religion. Allah will despise him and send his wrath upon him." Brothers and sisters, you know, sometimes we feel that some of these shortcomings that we have or we may have, they are not very serious issues. But when we turn towards the words of Ahlul Bayt, the instructions of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, we see that they're more than serious issues. So if you are being insulting towards like a poor Muslim, it is not something that Allah is just going to look the other way and just let you, you know, walk away with it. No, Imam says that it jeopardizes your faith in Allah, you know, and you being on the path of Islam. Did you notice that if a person is arrogant towards the poor, less fortunate and unwealthy Muslims, Allah will send his wrath upon that person because he's no longer on the path of Islam, of Prophet and Ahlul Bayt? This is what this statement of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is informing us about. Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam always paid special attention towards poor Muslims. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing about arrogance, more specifically arrogance towards the poor, right? So we see that, you know, the downside of being arrogant, especially towards the poor, is very obvious. And what's it at stake? It's our deen. It's us being on the path of Islam. And we talked about it before the break, where Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that if you are like this towards the poor Muslims, then you are no longer on the path of Islam. Okay? Now, one may ask, how can I be humble? How can I show this humility? While much can be said in this regard, but let's turn towards a saying of Imam Musa Qazim alayhi salam, who is the seventh divinely appointed Imam, who said, Humility means that your behavior to people must be in the same way as you expect of their behavior. It's a very straightforward, simple, and easy formula that the Imam has provided to us. Imam Kazim alayhi salam also mentions the degrees of humility that we will discuss in the next program, but let's just discuss this for a second. Imagine if you were a poor person, right? You didn't have wealth, you didn't have the bare minimum means to get by, and you were a Muslim, and you're looking at, you know, other Muslims who have more than you do, and they are not, you know, that much struggling in their lives in terms of their wealth and in terms of the facilities that they enjoy. How really do you expect them at that point to treat you, like in what manner, right? How do you expect them to approach you, to treat you, to talk to you, to entertain you, to help you? I mean, whatever the answer is, this is what Islam expects from us to when it comes to the other poor Muslims. So inshallah, let's contemplate and not just think. Inshallah, try to act.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Abu Ramadan and his family in the Gaza Strip.
Part 1.
The sun shone to announce the beginning of a new day. It was the 13th day of the war on the Gaza Strip, on the 20th of July 2014, the 28th of Ramadan, the fasting month for Muslims. Abu Ramadan Yassin and his family were at the sheltering school for those who were displaced from their homes. They got back to their house from the school in Al Zaytun neighborhood, south of Gaza City.
The situation is forced on us. I shall remind you of what I said a while ago. No giving up, no despair, and no devastation. We will say goodbye to our martyrs, build our homes, plant trees in our streets. We will send our martyrs to heaven, whether they are children, old men, or young. We will send them to heaven, then come back to resistance. This is the equation that should be dominant.
Why should you hear or watch the news?
Our families and children are being killed. We should know the news about where they bomb. We should know about the houses and the numbers of martyrs and the children who are dying. Those are our children, hearts, eyes, brothers and families. We should see the fighters who defend us and defend our grace and dignity.
We have been watching TV for 13 days. We watched the massacres, the killing, and the bombardments. They kill children, men, women, and old men. They kill people when they go anywhere, either to pray or buy food.
Do not allow anybody to use this logic to say that we can live peacefully with Zionists. You know what should be done with those who say this, or those who want us to live next to them.
Mm-hmm.
There is no water or power supply. We cannot live like the rest of humans. And there is war, destruction, killed and torn people in the streets. The army bombed the children on the beach and destroyed our houses.
Allah is sufficient for us against the Arab countries that refuse to support the Muslims. They are supporting the Americans and the Israelis. Our envoy Muslims, Allah is sufficient for us.
After the power outage, Omar Ramadan went to the kitchen to figure out a way to prepare breaking the fast meal for the family, despite the severe lack of ingredients. As for Abu Ramadan, he was out in the market looking for any available ingredients.
I am going to the market to buy some vegetables to break the fast for the children. I hope we find it open.
You know the way there, and people feel afraid of going to their farms and collecting vegetables. Most of the vegetables we have come from the south, and people feel afraid of coming to the Gaza City.
No one went to his land because they feared to be bombed in their lands or houses. The market is closed. The market is closed. There are no vegetables. I don't know what to do. You think you can manage by anything at the house? Okay, goodbye.
I am frying vegetables. I'm making fried potatoes and eggplants to break our fast with them. Today, my husband went to the market and found it closed because of the war. I am preparing food now using what I found in the house.
Abu Ramadan returned home to help his wife prepare the fast-breaking meal.
Arabs are watching us on TV. During that, they are cooking everything. Chicken, sheep, mandi, and other things. But what are we cooking? We are cooking potato and eggplants to break our fast. We are frying them to prepare our breakfast. We are listening to the news of our land, houses and children. We are being destroyed while Arab countries are just watching us and watching series and movies. See how the water supply is. There is no water in the tanks. The water supply is weak and cannot go up to the tanks.
This is how Abu Ramadan and his wife prepare the meal in their house. As for the families that stay at the school, they only have a small electric device they use for cooking.
The Israeli occupation started firing by tanks. We could not sleep that night. Allah is sufficient for us. They killed our neighbors and destroyed the houses on them. What can I say? I'm frying potato in the school. We have high morale and our men and fighters are strong, thank God. If we have the weapons, we will liberate Al-Quds. God willing, we will pray there. The food I'm preparing is fried potato and some salad. Thank God for everything. What shall we do?
My name is Camelia Kohail. My family consists of 5 members, my husband, 3 children and I. We were having breakfast when the area behind the house was hit. After a while, the missile hit the house itself. The kitchen, bedroom and living room were all damaged. Nothing remained in the house. It was all destroyed. The tin fell on my son and he is injured now. He is in pain because of his head. I have no other place to go, so now my children and I are homeless. I hope there will be a ceasefire or something. I have no place to stay at and nobody is helping us. The entire Arab world is just watching us.
Camelia lost her entire house and settled with her children in a sheltering school. As for Abu Ramadan and his family,
They have their own two-story house, ground floor and another upper floor. The house got hit by Israeli occupation drones, which caused huge damage in the upper floor, making it unlivable.
I was breaking the fast with my wife, and after we were done eating, she took away the leftovers and went to wash the dishes. She came back here while I was watching TV. I was watching the news about what was going on in our country and what happened to people.
I was standing near the window when the missile hit the house. With the explosion, I fell on the floor and could not see my daughter or my husband. I did not think I was home, but I thought I was at school. The stones were falling on us.
We flew off the mattresses, and I was moved from here to there. My daughter fell here. Something like fire entered the house and exploded. It was a missile. I got up looking for my wife and daughter and found them here. My daughter was hidden, injured, and bleeding. We all became wounded.
The ambulance took us. My daughter and I were injured, and shrapnel hit my husband in his back. Look at this. How could we become like this? We should live this life.
We had breakfast and said the evening prayers, then wanted to have some rest in our room. The missile hit the place, and look at the glass, and our clothes, and our condition. All our clothes are torn, and so are our sheets. All the furniture is on the floor. Look at the fragments. Look closely, and let the world witness that. All our clothes are torn. Look at my children's suits. What was their fault? What did they do? How can we afford buying new things? Allah is sufficient for us. The girls' clothes are torn too. Winter and summer clothes are all damaged. The closets and the beds are damaged too. If we had remained here for more 10 minutes, we would have been killed. We would have been torn of glass and of the rocket and its fragments. Is that a part of any religion? What did we do? Is that because we demand our rights? Or we demand our homeland? Or we defend our dignity? What was the crime we committed? Why did they come to our land? Why? Look at the missile. What did we do to deserve being hit by this? Is that because we are demanding our rights? Allah is sufficient for us.
While we were with Abu Ramadan's family in the house, we heard explosions everywhere, every now and then.
There was another explosion. That one hit some place moments ago and exploded. We do not know where that was. May Allah protect all the people and children. Sometimes planes hit us and sometimes tanks. What did we do to them? Can you see the fire in a Shaja'iyah neighborhood? They killed the people and burned the houses. Allah is sufficient for us against the Israeli occupation. Look at the sky. It is black because of the fire and of what they fire on us. They are cowards and could not go out of their tanks. Their chiefs tell them to kill themselves but not surrender to the Palestinians. They tell them that they should not be imprisoned. Kill yourselves but do not turn yourselves in. They and their army are cowards. They fire missiles and kill innocent people and hit hospitals and mosques. They destroyed every mosque.
Abu Ramadan and his family did not want to stay any longer inside the house, so they decided to leave before something disastrous happened.
Let's go out as they may bomb the house. Let's go to the school. Planes are firing missiles all day and night. Listen to the sounds of the planes and tanks.
Thank you.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
As Gaza healthcare system collapses, infectious diseases are surging in the tiny enclave. Experts warn that more deadly illnesses may spread due to 95% of residents' forced reliance on unsanitary water. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote, the infectious disease outbreaks that doctors on the ground, public health officials, and humanitarian groups have been warning about for weeks in Gaza appear to be in full force, the World Health Organization said recently as it reiterated its call for a ceasefire to save lives. The Global Public Health Organization said authorities have reported a surge in cases of diarrhea, with more than half of those affected children under the age of five, as the Zionist regime's decision to cut off fuel access in the blockaded enclave has shut down water desalination plants and disrupted waste collection. The circumstances have created an environment conducive to the rapid and widespread proliferation of insects, rodents that can carry and transit diseases. Recently, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said all of Gaza's 120 municipal water wells were expected to be depleted. Health officials in the blockaded enclave, where nearly 11,000 civilians have now been killed, are also reporting nearly 9,000 cases of scabies and lice, 12,600 cases of skin rashes, more than 1,000 reports of chickenpox, and nearly 55,000 cases of upper respiratory infections, as roughly 1.5 million displaced people crowd into hospitals, churches, schools, and shelters in search of safety from the Zionist regime's relentless bombardment. The International Rescue Committee, IRC, warned that those disease outbreaks could soon give way to the spread of more deadly illnesses like cholera and typhoid due to 95% of residents' forced reliance on unsanitary water in the past month. The humanitarian suffering in Gaza has already reached catastrophic levels and is set to get worse unless something changes immediately, said Bob Kitchen, vice president of emergencies for IRC, adding, while the overwhelming driver of mortality remains the ongoing violence and destruction, a humanitarian ceasefire now would also serve to help aid agencies get ahead of a looming public health crisis within an already vast humanitarian crisis. The conditions are ripe for the spread of communicable and waterborne diseases that adversely affect children and lead to preventable death. Al Jazeera reported earlier this month that experts have surmised the Zionist regime is intentionally leaving Palestinians in Gaza with a lack of safe drinking water, using water access as a weapon of war, and intensifying the humanitarian catastrophe. Experts say the Zionist regime has weaponized water to harm Palestinians in Gaza. In overcrowded shelters run by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, WHO said an average of 160 people are sharing one toilet and there is only one shower for every 700 people, compounding the unsanitary conditions and raising the risk of disease outbreaks. With the aid convoys largely blocked at the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt, cleaning supplies as well as medicines have no way of getting to hospitals and shelters. And water supplies that humanitarian groups have managed to get through the crossing are only 4% of what is needed. Medical workers also don't have sufficient personal protective equipment, making it more likely that they will acquire and transmit infections to the patients they are desperately trying to care for. The impending colder weather is raising alarm over the potential for worsening malnutrition and food shortages, particularly for more than 50,000 pregnant people and about 337,000 children under the age of 5 in Gaza. Kitchen said groups including the IRC are working to scale up their infection control programs as quickly as they can, but warned that their efforts will remain severely obstructed as long as powerful countries, including the United States, refuse to support calls for a ceasefire. Kitchen said, without a meaningful humanitarian ceasefire to allow the free flow of aid, the suffering of innocent Palestinian civilians will continue. Immediate and sustained diplomatic intervention is urgently needed to enable a humanitarian ceasefire, which would pave the way for addressing these pressing humanitarian protection needs and halt the health catastrophe that will lead to more deaths, particularly among children. WHO also reiterated its demand for the unconditional release of all hostages and a humanitarian ceasefire to prevent further death and suffering. Meanwhile, the website of the World Health Organization wrote, as deaths and injuries in Gaza continue to rise due to intensified hostilities, intense overcrowding and disrupted health, water and sanitation systems pose an added danger. The rapid spread of infectious diseases, some worrying trends are already emerging. Lack of fuel has led to the shutting down of desalination plants, significantly increasing the risk of bacterial infections like diarrhea spreading as people consume contaminated water. Lack of fuel has also disrupted all solid waste collection, creating an environment conducive to the rapid and widespread proliferation of insects, rodents that can carry and transmit diseases. The situation is particularly concerning for almost 1.5 million displaced people across Gaza, especially those living in severely overcrowded shelters with poor access to hygiene facilities and safe water, increasing risk of infectious diseases transmission. UNRWA, WHO, and the Ministry of Health are scaling up a flexible disease surveillance system in many of these shelters and health facilities. The current disease trends are very concerning. Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week we consider a trending news story and we